Hello and welcome to the MB Om podcast, where you will learn to master the business of yoga with guests from around the world who have experienced becoming successful yoga teachers, studio owners, and much more. Now, here's your host, Amanda Kingsmith.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the MB Om podcast. My name's Amanda and I'm your host for this and all episodes of the podcast. I'm so excited that you've decided to join me for this episode. If this is your first time tuning in, welcome to the show. And if you are a regular listener and subscriber, welcome back for another episode. But before we dive into this episode of the podcast is brought to you by Yoga Boss Babe. If you haven't heard about Yoga Boss Babe, you are going to love this. It's a monthly lifestyle subscription box for passionate and motivated yoga instructors who want to build and grow their yoga businesses. Basically, what happens is you sign up and every month you get a box of goodies that shows up on your doorstep. In the box are things that are going to help you grow your yoga business. So everything that comes in the box is designed to help you with some element of your business. On top of that, you have access to a monthly workshop, monthly coaching sessions, as well as the online community. I've been in the online community for close to a year now, and it's a really, really incredible community that allows you to connect with other yoga teachers and talk about things that you're experiencing and struggling in a really safe and friendly environment. Before I discovered Yoga Boss Babe, I was never really into the idea of getting a monthly box of things delivered to my doorstep because although I like stuff, I also try not to have too much stuff. But Liz Nguyen, the founder of Yoga Boss Babe, does an incredible job at partnering with brands and businesses that really have amazing products that you can actually put to use in your business. So if this sounds like something you're interested in, head on over to yogabossbabe.com and get started today. This episode of the podcast is also brought to you by Fave Yogis. Here's a business tool that's really going to change the lives of yoga teachers. The Fave Yogis app puts control and freedom in your hands. You can update your class schedule, offer your own classes anywhere, anytime, and get paid all from your phone. No more updating your schedule in multiple places and paying a ton of money each month for a software platform where students might stumble across your classes. Students simply open Fave Yogis and your schedule will be there. On top of being able to send students notifications about class updates, set prices and ticket availability, and auto-send reminders to your students, you can also post workshops and events that will allow you to reach organic traffic through the search feature that you may never have been able to reach through simply putting the events on your website. There's a brand spanking new feature on the Fave Yogis app. Teaching a lot of classes, now you can auto-generate text for sharing your schedule on social media. Along with the time and date, you can optionally include the title and location of each class or event. Head on over to the App Store and download Fave Yogis for free. It's Favyogis, and it's free on any App Store. Use code MBOM and let them know that I sent you. All right. Thank you so much to Yoga Boss Babe and Fave Yogis for sponsoring the show. I really hope that you guys will go check them out. It really, really helps me to have the sponsors for the podcast to be able to continue producing high quality content for you. Now, today on the podcast, I am super, super excited to be joined by Catherine Bruni Young. Catherine is doing incredible work in the yoga industry. She is a yoga teacher, a movement specialist. She has a small studio in her small town in Ontario, Canada, and she teaches workshops all over the world. She is really changing the game for yoga, looking more at the movement side of things and really trying to understand how yoga is impacting our bodies. As a yoga practitioner, this is something I'm super, super interested in. On top of that, she runs a successful online yoga business, and we dive into that. We talk about it all. So without further ado, here is Catherine.
I'm very excited to be joined on the podcast today by Catherine Bruni Young. She is a small studio owner, a yoga teacher, a movement specialist, and the host of the Mindful Strength podcast. Thank you so much for coming on the show today, Catherine.
Thanks for having me.
And where are you joining me from today?
So I live in a really small community called Williamstown, which is in Ontario, and it's about 20 minutes northeast of Cornwall, which is another very small town, but about 4.5 hours east of Toronto. So like very much eastern Ontario.
Okay, cool. I'm glad you gave that context because I'm from Alberta and I don't even know where that is. So
yeah,
for our foreign listeners, they're probably like, where on earth are you from? And so I want to dive into everything that you do now and the career that you've created for yourself, which is super amazing. But I was curious if we could back up a bunch of years and talk about how you first got into yoga.
Yeah. So my mom owned one of the first Ashtanga studios, probably the first Ashtanga studio in Toronto, also in Canada. So I pretty much like grew up hanging around in her studio and following along to classes. And I always just really liked to hang around with her. So we hung out a lot. And I started to do a little bit of yoga, although as a kid, it wasn't really my favorite thing to do. I was really like athletic and I liked more like high intensity sports and movements. I was really into dance. And then later on, I got into gymnastics and other types of sports. But I had always been learning yoga and doing yoga with her. And then of course her teachers. And so as I got into my teenage years, as I was dancing and doing gymnastics less, I just kind of fell into doing more yoga. And I really liked the environment. I liked that it wasn't like a competitive sport, but it still felt very, very physical. We were doing Ashtanga yoga, which, you know, was pretty intense. If people aren't really familiar with it, it's like kind of high intensity and lots of strength, but also lots of kind of extreme ranges of motion and movements that are like pretty far from functional, but also just really exciting. Like I got really into handstands and arm balancing and doing more of those strength positions. And because I had been a young dancer and gymnast, a lot of those poses came more naturally to me. Like I still had to practice and work on them for only God knows how many hours, but you know, I have the body type that will build muscle pretty quickly. And so I always was more interested in the strengthening part of the yoga poses as opposed to like trying to put both my feet behind my head. Although I definitely spent a number of years trying to do that as well. And then when I was 16, I started the teacher training program at my mom's studio, and then immediately after started teaching. I started teaching a teen class, and I taught the teen class for 3.5 years, and then they finally graduated me into like teaching adult drop-in classes. And it just started off like I was in high school when I started teaching. So I wasn't teaching full time. I was teaching one class a week, and eventually that turned into two classes a week, and eventually that turned into like my job. And after high school, there wasn't really like a university program that I wanted to go into. And so I just started doing yoga with my mom pretty much full time. And that's how it all got started. And then when I was around maybe like between 21 and 23, I started to find that my body wasn't feeling that good anymore, and my yoga practice was no longer making me feel really good. And I was having some repetitive strain injuries that I didn't even really know were repetitive strain injuries. I just thought, you know, my lower back is kind of bugging me, but like, so was all my other friends at yoga's lower backs. Mm-hmm. And you know, we all kind of had very similar injuries. No one was looking at them even in terms of like, oh, something's going wrong. It was just like, oh, this is something that you have to work through, or, you know, the pain in your knee is going to be released if you continue doing these things. And that was also when I was introduced to Ido Portal, who is a movement instructor. And after that, I got into strength work and actually learning about like the body. And that's when I started to really rethink what I was doing in my physical yoga practice and rethink the discomfort I was having in my body, and really starting to realize that like the way I had been training, which was the Ashtanga yoga system, was really not balanced and was probably not like the best thing I could be doing for my body in isolation of all other types of movements. So yeah, that's how the ball got rolling. And then that was about 6 years ago. And so over the last 6 years, I've dedicated my like learning time to really just learning a lot about strength and functional movement and relaxation and all different types of movement practices, from like Pilates to physiotherapy to like powerlifting, CrossFit, like as many different things as I could. And I've really kind of expanded what I think is good movement for the body and helpful movement and how much is too much and how all of that stuff, you know, impacts us in our daily life.
Wow. That's an incredible story. And there's so much that I want to dive in around that. But the first thing I want to acknowledge is the fact that I think you are the youngest person that I, or the person who started teaching the youngest that I've ever had on the podcast and that perhaps I've ever even talked to. That's incredible.
Yeah. I mean, it was good because now I'm 29 and I have over 10 years of experience, but also it was like, you know, as a 17-year-old, I probably didn't know a lot of the things that would have been helpful to know.
I mean, absolutely. I think that that's just being 17 years old in general, regardless of what you're doing.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, you know, growing up in this yoga setting and doing a lot of the same, I guess, kind of taking the same career path as your mom, was there ever any part of you that felt like, maybe I don't want to do this yoga thing? And I ask this because I think that sometimes we do just kind of like get into the path that our parents are doing and we genuinely love it. And obviously you do now, but I'm just curious if there was any point where you're like, I don't like yoga. I don't want to come to the studio with you. This isn't my thing. Like, I don't want to do this.
Yeah. So, I mean, in my teenage years, before I started teacher training and before I started really enjoying the practice, there was definitely a sense of like, oh, yoga is so boring and it's so hot and sweaty and it feels so uncomfortable. And like, yeah, just being a teenager and not really liking that whole thing. But yeah, I don't really know what changed. I don't know how it changed. But it seemed like all of a sudden, I really enjoyed the practice and like didn't mind the crazy heat and the crazy poses and all of that stuff. I mean, at that time in my life, I wasn't really planning on being a teacher. Like, I don't know what I really thought my career path would be, but I think it wasn't something that I was really thinking about that much at that point. And even as I started teaching more, like I started teaching one class and then two and then three classes a week, but I'm not sure if I was thinking about it in terms of like, this is going to be my full-time job. It just slowly started to work its way into that. And then, you know, all of a sudden it's kind of like taking over your whole life and you realize it's become your full-time job.
I love that. You're like, oh, I'm working full-time. And I didn't really even realize I was working full-time. That's kind of like the best type of job. You know, you like it when you don't realize that until you're already in it, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm curious, you mentioned Idor Portal, who's, I mean, super, super badass. If anyone listening has not heard of him, definitely go YouTube him, check him out. He's doing awesome stuff. I'm curious if there's some other people who have been really influential kind of in the movement sphere, I guess you could say, that have kind of inspired where you've taken your teaching.
Yeah. So I worked with a personal trainer who was living in Toronto, who like doesn't really have much of an online presence or like put things out into the world. You kind of have to know him if you're going to work with him. But I worked with him for a couple of years really, really closely. He was kind of like my mentor. And he had done a whole bunch of Poliquin training, and it's basically just like super conventional strength and conditioning. And so as I was working with him, I then also started taking the Poliquin training courses, mm-hmm. Which were a huge inspiration to me. I mean, it's definitely not like movement practice or mobility practice or like smooth flowing movement. It was very much conventional, like weightlifting, but I found that it was amazing. The education I got through them was really, really good. And then I could also apply that to my like body weight movement practice. And so I think that has been one of the most influential things that I've done. And then, of course, I've taken so many movement certification courses. Like, I've done some work with the people at Agatsu, and they've been really, really wonderful. I did a little bit of gymnastics strength training, and that was really great. Pilates classes, dance classes. And it really continues. Like, my partner and I have been taking some Brazilian jiu-jitsu classes on the weekends when we're both in town, and always trying to find new things. And at the end of the day, I think if I always fall back on something, it's either the weightlifting that I learned through Poliquin, or the movement practices that I learned through Ido Portal and his whole school of teachers.
Awesome. Yeah, that's really interesting. And I'll definitely put links for that in the show notes and whatnot so people can go check that out. In terms of the transition from being like an Ashtangi yogi, I guess you could say, to doing more like mindful strength, mindful movement, do you still practice like anything from like primary, secondary series?
Not really, if I'm going to be really honest. I mean, I like to do a little bit of downward dog pose. I like to do planks. I like to do some cobra, some upward dog. Occasionally, I might do a couple standing poses, like the triangle pose, but I'll try to make it more dynamic. I'll try to do it even loaded or weighted. I don't really make a habit of practicing any of those poses anymore, which probably sounds really strange because I did them for so many years. But I like the overall framework of a yoga class, of an Ashtanga practice. Like, I like how there is a warm up, and then you do some standing sequence, and then you do some seated sequence, and then you lie down on the floor. I really like that part of the yoga practice. And so that's the framework that I use to still teach most of my classes that I teach. And I try to stick to that a little bit if I do my own practice in the studio. But within that framework, I'm definitely not focusing on like yoga pose shapes necessarily. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, I live in a really small town, and there isn't really a yoga studio that I want to go to. And so the majority of my training either happens in my little studio by myself, or at the gym with other people. And because I'd say 85% of my practice time is spent in the gym, I would typically gravitate more towards like locomotive movement, mobility, body weight strength, like chin ups and hanging and stuff like that. And then lifting weights.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. And I think, you know, this is really interesting to me because I've never really gotten into Ashtanga yoga. And I actually find that of all the yoga practices I do and all the different types of movement, fitness, exercise, Ashtanga usually leaves me feeling the worst in my body. Mm-hmm. And I've never really been able to pinpoint exactly what it is. I just know that when I leave, I don't feel good. But as a yogi and a yoga teacher, it's kind of always been a really, really small amount of guilt. Like, maybe I should just, you know, sit with this stuff and practice it more. But then I'm like, no, I need to be true to myself, my body, how I feel. Have you been able to pinpoint kind of what it is maybe about this practice that for you or for clients that you've worked with or people you've talked to who maybe don't feel so great practicing this, like what it is about the practice?
Yeah. So, I mean, in all honesty, I think that if I were to go to an Ashtanga class, I would probably not feel so great at the end. And for me, it's just like a lot of passive range of motion, extreme ranges of motion. Like, my body feels pretty good at this point. I feel like the injuries I was dealing with are pretty much gone as long as I keep doing my strength training. But if I start putting my knees and if I start putting my lower back into those positions again that I used to, I can definitely feel things happening that I feel are not super productive. I think that there's probably people out there who the practice still makes them feel good. Like, honestly, I would say the first 5 years of doing that practice, it made me feel like $1 million. And I was like, this is awesome. It's making me feel good. This must be good. And then it got to the point where it didn't make me feel good. And I think that on the one hand, it's like, if you do too much of one thing, eventually it starts to not make you feel that great. Just like running or CrossFit or whatever, like repetitive strain is repetitive strain. And usually that doesn't feel good. I think that, you know, some people like the environment of the Ashtanga yoga class and other people don't. Like, things that I really look at are, you know, like the extreme heat. So most classes I've been to are like pretty hot. You're kind of dripping in sweat. And like, for me, that doesn't feel so good anymore. Also in that practice, there's typically like a lot of hands-on adjustments, and like, that doesn't feel very good for me anymore. Like, there's a lot of factors. Some people I think are going to get really stimulated from the practice. If you're doing, you know, like the whole primary series, like it's pretty intense. It's pretty stimulating. And for some people, that doesn't feel very good. So yeah, I think there's so many reasons, but at the same time, like, I'm sure there's people listening who it does make them feel good. And I also, you know, I just want to share what my experience was without saying this is going to make everyone feel bad and no one should do this, because I do think that everyone is having their own experience. And I just try to be honest about what happened to me and, you know, the people who I noticed around me, but also everyone's experience is going to be really different. Like, maybe not everyone has to do it 6 days a week.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe you do it once a week or twice a week. You do a little strength training on the side and everything is fine and dandy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I 100% agree with that. And I'm glad you brought that up too, because I was thinking about how I wanted to add a little caveat that this is not a hate on Ashtanga yoga. It's just talking about, you know, a personal experience. And I think that it's a reminder that when you're doing something, to be really, really present with how it's making you feel and not continuing to do things that aren't making you feel good just because you feel like, oh, well, you know, Ashtanga yoga equals good for my body. Maybe it doesn't after a certain period of time, like you, or maybe it just doesn't kind of right off the get-go like it has for me. We all have those different experiences.
For sure. And I think it's important to not do movements with your body just because they're part of a system. And which is what I was doing, you know, I was just doing the poses because they were in the sequence. And then, you know, to not do movements with your body just because you think you're going to have some spiritual advancement, which is also what I was doing.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm curious, you know, when you kind of transition from like, okay, you know, doing Ashtanga to doing more like movement and that sort of thing, what was sort of the response from your students, your community, like the people you were working with and that sort of thing?
Right. So at this point, so nowadays it seems like to be doing like yoga and strengthening stuff is like the new cool thing. But 6 years ago, that was not the case. And so all my friends at the yoga studio thought I was nuts. They thought it was nuts that I was going to CrossFit and doing strength training. They all thought I was going to hurt myself. My mom at the same time was going through a similar experience of like having been fairly injured and, then also being diagnosed with breast cancer. And she was just kind of, you know, rethinking her entire life, not only just her movement, but we both started to branch out at the same time. And so I think that that was helpful. And then little by little, I started to teach some new exercises in my classes, and it was such a slow progression. Like, I didn't just change my mind about this overnight. This really happened over the course of 6 years. So I remember after the first workshop I went to with Ido, I had to go teach my like Saturday afternoon class that afternoon. And I went into the class and I was just like, oh my God, like, what do I even do now? Now that I've learned these new things that I think are so much better than some of the things I've been teaching. And so I literally just took like one or two of the movements and said, okay, you guys, like, here's what I learned this morning in class. And I think it's really cool. So let's just do this first and see how it goes. And little by little, I found that people were really, really receptive. And I think people were also receptive because it was a slow progression. I didn't go in there one day and say, all these yoga poses are bad, and now we're going to do like squats and lunges instead. I really like kind of snuck it in little bit by bit, and also told people like, here's what's going on. Now I'm learning new things. So that's why I'm doing these new things, and really staying true to the overall kind of feeling of a yoga class, which I think is what people sometimes really like. So people don't want to go to a class and have the teacher say, okay, 10 squats, go. You know, like you have to still speak to people like they're doing yoga, I find. And, you know, you want to cue it in a way that's still kind of seems like yoga, and sequence it in a way that still seems like yoga. So, you know, 6 years later, I don't really teach yoga poses anymore, but my class still kind of looks and seems like a yoga class. Like, we still warm up slowly. We do some leg work. We sit down. We do some seated stuff. And then we lie down for 5 minutes at the end, which is a really different experience than going to a strength class at a gym where you basically just go, go, go. And then they tell you to leave and everybody's like super stimulated. Because I've also, you know, like, I've also heard many teachers say that as soon as I started teaching new things in my classes, my students started to complain and people started to not go to my classes. And I think that it's a little bit of an art figuring out how to get this stuff into the class and still make it kind of feel like yoga.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So if somebody's listening and they can resonate with this a lot and they're maybe looking to add in some new types of movement or, you know, strength and conditioning type stuff into their classes. So you mentioned like keeping that sequence and that flow kind of the same, but can you walk me through like in a little more detail what that actually looks like? Like if I was to come to your yoga class, and it's called yoga and I get there, like what can I actually expect?
Okay. So I'll probably start with some wrist preparation exercises that I teach. And so we're like, you know, in a table position on the floor, doing some wrist warm up. From there, I would sometimes do maybe like some shoulder circles from a table position. Maybe some stuff that looks like it would come out of the FRC practice, like some active range, slowed, controlled movements. From there, maybe we come on up to standing. Maybe we do some footwork. Like lately, I've been standing on dowels, working on our foot mobility and our balance and our kind of overall dynamic balance. And I would sometimes, you know, choose a couple exercises to start with at the beginning and then even repeat them a couple of times just to help get people more warmed up and also just to have some repetition, because I think that people like repetition. I think that's why people, part of why people like the sun salutations, because it's this like repetitive movement that they can get into and they can like feel how it changes rep to rep. And from there, some type of standing sequences. So like, you know, single leg deadlifts with a block, some types of side to side lunge work, like making it flow from one exercise into the next exercise, maybe some squatting practice, maybe triangle pose could be part of that. Maybe we do some work in my classes where we move around the room a little bit. Like maybe we're down in the squat and we walk around. I don't really teach with yoga mats anymore, so we don't necessarily stay on the spot. Mm-hmm. And then coming on down to the floor, doing some like active range of motion for the hips or for the shoulders, or maybe some core work kind of depending on the day, like maybe some hip circles from a table. And then definitely some type of passive stretch at the end. So maybe like a passive twist or a passive forward fold, something that will start to calm the nervous system down a little bit. And then finally lying down, or just finding a comfortable resting position for like at least 5 minutes.
Awesome. I love that. I mean, you just put me into a place where I was like, I want to be in this class. It sounds incredible. And I love that you incorporate, you know, those aspects of mindfulness, like Shavasana, like having that warm up. And I'm sure there's like the breath work and the cues and stuff in between as well. But it sounds like you've really, really kind of honed in on how to keep this flow while making it quite different from your traditional yoga class.
Yeah, for sure.
And so I'm curious, you know, when you were younger teaching Ashtanga, were you teaching mostly classes like in the Toronto area, in your town where you live and that sort of thing? Or what did your class schedule sort of look like at that point?
Yeah. So I moved away from Toronto almost 3 years ago. And right before I left the city, my weekly schedule looked like I probably taught 9 or 10 classes a week. It was at that point mainly at Downward Dog, so mainly at one studio, which was like such a treat because I've also gone through phases of my life where I'm teaching like 3 classes here and 3 classes there and kind of running all over the city, which I think a lot of yoga teachers can really relate to.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And then I taught like a small handful of private clients, but that wasn't ever my big thing that I was doing. And then I started teaching workshops, like very easy 2 or 3 hour workshops. Man, when did I start doing that? Maybe 4 or 5 years ago, mm-hmm. but not a lot of them. Maybe I just do like 2 or 3 of them a year. And initially I was just doing them at Downward Dog at the studio that I was already teaching at. So I knew everyone who would come to the workshop. And I started by teaching a handstand workshop. And as you can imagine, that was very popular because... Mm-hmm. 5 years ago, everyone wanted to do handstands.
I don't know if the handstand's ever going to get old. Like, I was a fan of handstands when I was like 3 years old, and I still like handstands.
Yeah, exactly. And that was what I was good at. So that's what I decided I would teach a workshop on. And then gradually, you know, because my mom was in the yoga industry, like I knew a lot of people who owned studios. And so I got to a point where I had a little bit of confidence where I'd like send somebody an email. Like, you know, there's a studio in Hamilton called De La Soul, and the woman who owned that studio was a friend of ours. And so I just sent her an email and I was like, do you think I could come teach my workshop at your studio? And they were like, yeah, sure. Like, let's see if we can work this out. And so it started really slowly like that and, you know, has just continued to grow.
Yeah, that's amazing. And so, I mean, you travel quite a bit for teaching now. You teach all types of workshops. You've got trainings, online trainings. Can you take me from, I guess, like a little bit younger Catherine, kind of, you know, teaching workshops here and there, teaching classes regularly, having a couple privates, to where you are now in your career?
Yeah. So, I mean, it was a huge process of changing things over. About four or five years ago, when I first got into strength and I first had been advertising, like even just on Facebook, that I was like doing some new things in my classes, someone named Michael Stone, who I had known for a while, but we hadn't really done anything together. He started taking private lessons with me, and he was like a, you know, very experienced, kind of like yoga, but more so Buddhism and mindfulness teacher. And him and I decided to make an online course together. He had already created like many online courses, has been running this, you know, very successful business for quite a while. And so we made our first online course together probably 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. And that was a big turning point in my life because I learned how to do it with him. I saw how he was running his business. I was just like, okay, like I want my business to be like this. You know, it's not just one thing. It's not just teaching workshops. It's not just running around the city teaching classes. It's more diverse. There's different offerings. When you start putting stuff online, like you can reach people all over the world. So you're not only marketing to people who live in your city, you're literally marketing to everyone, which is like pretty epic. So that was the big turning point. Our online course was really successful. I still get emails. I still meet people to this day who was like, I did the new wave of yoga with you and Michael. And it was like so groundbreaking. And after that, I decided, okay, I can do this. So I need a website. So I like got a friend of mine to make me a website. I hired a videographer. We shot the first online course I ever made by myself, which was a handstands online course. Mm-hmm. And, you know, figured it out. Then I released it for the first time ever. I didn't really know what I was doing. So I like I sold 35 of them and delivered the course to people pretty much through email. Like, it was very unprofessional. But I think everyone knew that, like, it was a very organic growth situation. And that was the first time I ran an online course. And then I realized, like, okay, if I really want to do this, if I really want to have a yoga business or movement business, I have to put this stuff out into the world and I have to put it online, because also I didn't really want to be like a big studio owner. And I moved away from Toronto 3 years ago and I opened a small studio in Cornwall, but I knew it was going to be like a passion project. It was going to, you know, give me somewhere to teach. I knew it was never going to make a lot of money. And I knew that I wasn't going to be putting all of my energy into it. And 3 years ago, I moved here. I started working with a technical person. And him and I have been working together pretty much since then. And with his help, I've been able to really overcome all of the technical obstacles. And, you know, we've been through quite a few technical obstacles together at this point. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think he had ever taken somebody's brand that was like in such early stages and then pumped it up into something that was like doing international sales within a year and a half. So we were really kind of learning together, figuring stuff out together. But without him, I would not have gotten as far as I've gotten today with like 3 online courses and, you know, an expanding online mentorship program. So it was really like figuring out, first of all, like, can I generate the content that I need to put out there? Because I think that for a lot of people, that is a boundary. It's like you have to be able to produce so much content and it has to be good content. Mm-hmm. And you have to be able to put that out into the world and like feel good about that. And then at the same time, you need the other half of the equation, which is like tech support, which is, you know, for people like me, like definitely not something that I'm going to ever be figuring out in my life. And so I needed support. And when I, you know, when we started working together, it was a little bit scary. Like it was a little bit scary to be paying somebody thousands of dollars to help me establish my online business. But, you know, looking back, it's like, had I not done that, I don't know where I would be today. I definitely would not be running the online business that I am and traveling all over the place teaching. But it's so hard, I think, to take that next leap forward into like, I believe in myself so much that I am going to invest in my own business to take this to the next level. And I think that's where people stumble a little bit. And that's where people get nervous. And I mean, like in my business right now, like I'm about to take that step again in the next couple months. And I feel those feelings all over again. I feel mm-hmm. the like, oh my God, like, am I really ready for this? And like, is my business really ready to do this? And you got to get through those little hurdles. You have to prove to yourself that like, you're going to be able to figure it out. So you're not just throwing money into the air and like hoping that people buy your course or hoping that like it all works out. Like it does have to be pretty smart, but at the same time, you have to believe in your own skills, which is sometimes a bit confronting. And I definitely have days with my life and with my business where I'm just like, oh my God, I need to be doing so much more than I'm already doing. And how am I ever going to make this happen? And then I have other days with my business where people are like, you're doing really well. Like, holy moly. And, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I can relate to that so much. Have you seen there's like an image of like what it's like, what people think entrepreneurship will be like versus what entrepreneurship's actually like. And on the left, it's like this like upward curving straight line, like as in like you start from the bottom and you just slowly become more successful. And on the right, it's like this crazy curly Q line that's like back and forth and up and down and all these things. And I feel like that's exactly it. It's like there's days where you're like, I've got this, like I kick ass, and other days where you're like, I don't know what I'm doing today.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I'm the type of person who's like, I would say overall extremely motivated. But I definitely have days where I just have no motivation to get work done. And mm-hmm. I think to put really good content out into the world, like It has to come from a place of being very passionate if it's going to really speak to people. And some days you just don't have that passion. And, you know, on those days, I just don't do work. Like, this is what it's come down to. On those days, I just do whatever I feel like sit on the couch and knit or watch Netflix or go to the gym or do something else. Knowing that like the pendulum is going to swing back. And although I sometimes have a couple like very unproductive days, even in a row, it's like the pendulum is going to swing. And when it does, you know, you are going to get all of this stuff done and have all of this passion for your work again. Which like being self-employed is pretty wonderful because you can to some degree go with that with your own like internal feelings of when you're excited about your work and when you're not. And I think to pretend that you're always excited about your work is not an accurate representation of like human life.
Yeah, absolutely. I would agree with that. And I love that you mentioned just kind of like giving yourself a break, because I'm a big fan of, you know, taking regular breaks throughout the day, throughout the week, giving yourself like today it's Friday and sure, I've got stuff to do because my list is never ending, but I'm going to just take the day off, turn my out of office on and go do something that makes me feel really happy. Because I think that those times can give you these like big bursts of creativity. I am curious, you know, if anybody's listening, because, and I'm sure there's plenty of people out there who can relate to this, during those times of lack of motivation, outside of kind of just following your intuition around like, okay, I feel like knitting all day today, so I'm going to do that. Is there any like specific things you do to kind of like encourage that motivation to come back?
I really like to walk. Like I really like to go out for a walk. I'll go out almost every day unless it's raining. And I find when I'm out walking, I oftentimes have good ideas about mm-hmm. what I should be doing with my business and with my life. And sometimes I go out for a walk and I'll listen to like a podcast that I really like, that I find really inspiring. You know, I live in such a small community and I travel so much to these big cities, but when I come home, I'm like really kind of in the middle of nowhere. And so there's definitely things that I do and things that I look at to gain motivation, whether it's motivation for my practice. Like sometimes I just scroll through Instagram looking at like videos of Ito and his teaching team and what they're doing and just try to like replicate certain things. And I find that very motivating and very fun. And sometimes I listen to like business podcasts. Like I think last year when I was building my online platform, I probably listened to every single episode of the Gary Vaynerchuk podcast, nice. Which like, you know, love it or hate it, it's a thing. And I found that to be extremely motivating. I find doing some type of movement kind of like, you know, gets my brain working again. If I sit down in the house for too long, like motivation stuff seems to get worse.
Mm-hmm. I would second that.
I'll like go out for a walk. And if that doesn't seem to be working, then I'll just dive into something. Like, I mean, for example, I just came home from teaching 9 days of workshops in a row on the other side of the country. So I came home and I was just like a disaster. Like I was exhausted. I was jet lagged. I was like probably the most tired I've ever been in my life. And I had been working on this sweater that I'm knitting, which like is a pretty big commitment. And so
yeah, that's massive.
Yesterday I taught a couple of things that I need to teach in the morning. Yesterday I knitted like almost the entire sleeve of my sweater, which was like basically a whole day event. But I just like dove into it and it was just a nice little creative goal for the day that was not like generating content or writing blogs or something like that. So like, yeah, just trying to get into a new type of project. And for me, like creative things, like learning how to make something or like learning how to cook something or baking a few loaves of bread or something like that is really helpful for just like getting that kind of creative juice flowing again.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I love that. I think one of the things that kind of holds people back from giving themselves those days, and I know that this is something that I've personally experienced for sure, is this kind of like financial thing that kind of sits in the back of our brain. Like when you're self-employed, it's generally what I put in is what I get out. How do you sort of balance, or I guess get to the point where you trust, where you're like, okay, I can spend this day working, diving in on this creative project that's not giving me any financial return, and know that my business is going to be okay and that I can pay my bills next month and have a roof over my head and that sort of thing?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult. I feel like right now I am more trusting of my business than ever. Like I've gotten to the point where I've kind of stopped worrying about it, but also, you know, I plan my life a year in advance. Like my entire year is already booked with workshops. And, you know, that gives you definitely some type of security. Maybe not all those workshops do well, or maybe they don't all run, but like, you know, most of them are going to run and most of them are going to do well. I really try to think about it as like, I try to get as much work done as I possibly can and as much preparation done as possible when I'm feeling good and really feeling like it. And then that gives me peace on the days where I'm not really feeling like it. I have never been through a phase where I haven't gotten stuff done for like a month at a time. Like it's never gone on that long for me. It's always just a couple of days of needing a really good rest, or maybe a week of like needing a rest or a vacation or something like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, trusting that it's all going to work out is difficult. And I think to some degree, you have to just trust that it's all going to work out. But at the same time, you do have to make it happen. You know, if you're listening to the Gary Vaynerchuk podcast, he's like, never take a rest and work 100 hours a day and just like make it happen.
Suffice off and, coffee. Don't sleep. Don't eat. Yeah, just make it happen.
Like, don't care about your diet. Don't, you know, sleep. And I think that I already have that. Like, you know, I grew up with two self-employed parents and like Italian immigrant family. So I already have that like guilt for sitting on the couch and not getting work done mentality inside me. And so I tend to be fairly productive, but you know, some people don't have that. Some people, you know, if you're coming from a position of like, you've been an employee, you've been working for someone else for quite a long time, and now you're going to run your own business. Sometimes it's hard to know like where to start, mm-hmm, and how much effort you actually have to put in. And I think if you're in that stage, then you should just put in as much effort as you possibly can until you need a day off, and then like take a day or two off and do whatever you want.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think that you're touching on really good stuff here. Cause I think that it's a lot about kind of figuring out and knowing who you are and how you work, and then having a lot of trust and faith, which is so hard, especially like if you go from like corporate job or something that gives you a consistent paycheck to something where you're self-employed, it's really easy to kind of get wrapped up into this like, okay, where's my next dollar coming from? Where's this next like chunk of money coming from? And I think that's where we can kind of get in our heads about, I can't take breaks because if I take breaks, then I don't make money.
Yeah. And at the same time, it's like, you know, you really need your work to be quality. I think that self-employed people, everything they put out into the world needs to be the best possible for that time in your life. And I think that, you know, for self-employed people and for people who work in movement, you know, there's only so much work one person can do. There's only so many classes somebody can teach. There's only so many private clients you can teach physical movement with your body. And I feel like when I was living in Toronto, I was maxing out on the amount of classes I could teach. And like, I literally physically could not do more. And I think a lot of movement teachers, yoga teachers max out on that. And I think that that's where, you know, if you have something that's really special and is really helpful for people, and you have a really strong kind of target audience in mind, then that's where putting stuff online really, really makes sense and eventually provides a bit of passive income that you're like, you don't really have to worry about so much.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think that, you know, do what you did. Like if it's totally overwhelming when it comes to like, what camera do I buy? How do I edit this thing? Like, I don't even have a website. You know, hiring somebody who can do that can be massive. And I think that a lot of yoga teachers in particular, when they're not making a ton of money or they're hustling so hard for their money, I think there's a little bit of reservation around investing that money. And like you said, it's scary to trust your money with somebody who's going to do something for you. But I think that having somebody who is an expert in the thing that you're not can really allow you to focus on what you do really well to create that quality content.
Yeah, for sure. You need somebody to help you, even if it's just minimal help, like a website or something like that. And, you know, like I've definitely hired fancy videographers for some of my online courses. And then I've shot an online course in my own house completely by myself. Mm-hmm. And it literally cost me nothing to put together. And I priced it accordingly. Like, it's not as expensive as my professional online courses are, but the content is just as good. And I think that if your content is good, people don't care as much if it's like some fancy camera or, you know, a million camera angles and some fancy delivery system. Like, people are buying your course because they want the information that's in your brain. And if you can give people that information, I always tell people, like, just start. Like, set up a little camera or your iPhone or find some type of like video conferencing platform you record through and just start doing something and, you know, price it accordingly. Like, if the quality isn't good, then you want to price it according to that. But you want to make sure that the content quality is as good as possible, as like top notch, as clear, as well thought out, you know, whatever you want it to be, well researched, whatever, mm-hmm. as possible. Because that's what people want when they buy your program online.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. And I think that that's such a great point, because I think we can get so caught up in this needs to be like perfect content and it also needs to be perfect quality. And then I think those are the projects that like never see the light of day. And it's so unfortunate because, you know, realistically, we're never going to be like, this is 100% perfect. And, you know, I'm confident in saying that. I think that it's easy to get it to like a point where you're like, okay, you know, I put my heart and soul in this and I'm ready to put it out there. But it's hard to make it like perfect, perfect.
Yeah. And on all the business podcasts I've listened to, you know, I'm a fan of the Masters of Scale podcast as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, their big thing is like, if you wait until it's perfect, you waited too long.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I would agree. I think there's a quote by, what is his name? The CEO of LinkedIn, I think, said this.
And I've yes.
I've talked about this quote on the podcast too. It's like, if you don't look back on the first thing you did and feel like a little bit like, ooh, that's not so great, then you haven't improved. And that's been like I have three podcasts, and that's been my whole thing around podcasting. And my boyfriend and I have been running a podcast for almost 4 years. And our first episode is like cringeworthy to me now. I don't know if anyone else thinks that, but that's how I feel.
For sure. For sure. I mean, it's with podcasts are very much like that.
Yeah.
And once it's out, I mean, you could delete it, but you can't really like unhear it from the people who heard it. But, you know, so my Handstands online course that I shot a long time ago, you know, I sold that to all these people. And then a year later, I completely redid the platform. I redid the links that I had included. Like, I redid a lot of stuff, and I just gave everyone who had previously bought it just access to the new version. And I think that that's also such a good thing to remember. Like, if people are putting content online and selling things online, like, if you decide that in a year from now you're going to go back and redo some of it and fix it up, you know, the people who bought it, just give it to them again, and everyone is going to feel really good about it. Nobody is going to feel like they didn't get the best thing they could get. Or I find that people are just really understanding of like, you continue to learn and grow. Your material continues to learn and grow. And that's normal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I love that. And I think that it's, again, it's always remembering that you can go back, especially with something like an online course, you can go back and you can fine tune, you can make those changes like you did. You can add content as you learn and grow. And that keeps people like excited about what you're doing and really happy that they bought that course in the first place. It's like you're providing that value over and over again for them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you mentioned how your workshop schedule is scheduled about a year out. And I think that that's kind of like the yoga teacher's dream. And obviously, you know, you've been honing your skills for years and years now. But I'm curious for anyone listening, what do you think is kind of the first steps to take between somebody who's teaching maybe a couple workshops a year and getting to a point where you can book yourself out like a year in advance?
So I think that first you want to start, even just like think about the year as like the quarters, you know, booking workshops like a few months in advance also means that you can promote those workshops much more and they're probably going to do a lot better. You know, for me, the thing about teaching workshops is people need to know who you are. A, if they're going to invite you to go teach a workshop, but then B, like if people are actually going to sign up for that workshop, like people need to know who you are. And that comes down to everything that you put out into the world. And if you're trying to just teach workshops like in your home studio when people know you, it's much easier because you can literally like talk to people, be like, hey guys, and I'm teaching this workshop in 2 months from now and you should sign up for it and whatever. But then you start teaching workshops in other places, maybe like a neighboring city or something like that. That's when it is really helpful if you have already been putting stuff on the internet for, you know, I'd say at least a year. Like, yeah. I think if yoga teachers are trying to expand where they're teaching workshops and move into different districts or different studios or different, you know, provinces or states or whatever, you need to plan for that by putting good material on the internet. And a lot of it needs to be for free.
that's the key word, free.
To try to cast your net as wide as you can, because those are all the people who come to my workshops. And most of the people always ask me this. They're like, how do these people invite you to go teach workshops? Mm-hmm. And most of them have invited me because they've taken my online course and they want to host the workshop and they want to go a little bit further. But without putting things on the internet, like literally no one would know about what you're doing. So that's really huge. I mean, podcasts right now seems to be like the most effective way of spreading the word. Like my podcast every week will have way more listens and downloads than any social media post will ever have. Mm-hmm. Like it's a whole other world. So if people are looking to, you know, find ways to reach humans, that's a really good way, although it's not easy. Like, don't get me wrong.
Basically, I can second that.
You know, but yeah, if you want to teach workshops, people need to know about the work you're doing. And I found that the most effective way to do that is like post things on the internet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. And I would definitely agree with it. And I think it's looking at like where your market is, but also just kind of trial and error a little bit, like put some videos on YouTube, have those filter into your courses, have an email list, have Instagram, you know, Facebook, private communities, do a podcast if that feels like something that's going to work for you. And I think that something that's really interesting with that too, that you touched on by mentioning podcasts, is kind of like following the trends a little bit. Like podcasts are definitely blowing up. Like when I first started my travel podcast 4 years ago, and I would tell people I hosted a podcast, the response was like, pod what? Like, yeah. So what's this thing that you do? And then yeah. I would explain it like, oh, it's like radio, but like I can talk about whatever I want with my co-host and we can have whoever we want on it and we get to choose our ads. And they're like, sorry, what is this thing? Like just no idea. You'd meet the occasional like early adopter, like maybe not even early adopter, maybe a little bit further into that kind of like marketing chart thing that they have to describe that stuff. But it's just, it wasn't popular. It wasn't mainstream at that point. And now it's like almost everyone knows what podcast is and they have their favorites and they're looking for more and that sort of thing.
Yeah, for sure. You have to be on top of what's happening. And, you know, one thing I've really taken from listening to business podcasts are like, you have to be doing business in the day that you're living in. I think that came from Gary Vaynerchuk's podcast. So, you know, I meet a lot of yoga teachers who are good at doing their yoga thing, but, you know, just have not, like, don't have a website, don't have an email list, are not using social media for whatever reason, are not like on top of the business tactics of the day. And that's really important regardless of what your business is. And I think that, you know, if you're running like a marketing company or you're selling shoes or something, it's really obvious that like, okay, I need to be doing business on all of these business platforms that people these days are using. But for some reason in yoga, you know, maybe because it's a bit more of like a spiritual practice for some people, or a bit more of like an intuitive practice, I think sometimes people think that business is the opposite of yoga. I had somebody ask me in a workshop a few months ago. They were like, how do you reconcile doing business in yoga? And I was like, I don't think business is the opposite of yoga. And maybe not everybody is going to agree with that. But I think that you can have completely ethical and positive business tactics and still be using all these platforms that all the big businesses are using, like social media and email marketing and basically just everything that's on the internet.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that you brought that up because I'm in 100% agreement with you. Like, you know, I read a yoga business podcast and I think that hopefully most people listening who have found the podcast and felt like, you know, they want to subscribe and download and listen are of the same mindset. But it's definitely been like one of the biggest hurdles I've faced in terms of putting this type of content out into the industry. And there's a lot of people who are like, I don't think that we should be having these conversations. And I don't think that you're right about combining business and yoga. And to me, it's never been like, let's make this like gross or icky or try to trick our students. It's like business is just a natural thing that's going to come in any industry. And yoga is no different. The things that we're doing are naturally allowing us to build our businesses and to be entrepreneurs. But we just kind of have to shift our mindset just a little bit to like, okay, it's okay to invite students onto my email list or invite them to the workshops that I have or invite them to the retreats I'm doing. There's nothing wrong with doing that.
Yeah. And especially if your students want to do more stuff with you, like if your students want to learn more and they want to go on a retreat and they want to do more of the things that they love doing, then it's the perfect fit.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. And I think that it's starting to transition a little bit. And I think that coming from like the side of yoga teachers, you know, like you were saying you did early in your career, like running around all over a city, taking on so many classes to make enough money, it's just coming to a point where I think yoga teachers are looking for something else. They're like, okay, how can I make this better for myself? How can I make this more sustainable? Because I can't do this forever.
Yeah, for sure. And I think people are realizing that running studios is also not really an effective way to, I know people who have very successful studios, but definitely not something that every yoga teacher is going to be able to do.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I've said this, I feel like 100 times on the podcast, but I just remember in my yoga teacher training that I was so like, it came to the point of, you know, everyone's kind of talking about, well, like, what are you going to do after training? Like, are you going to teach? Like, what do you want to do with this yoga thing? And so many people were like, I want to open a yoga studio. And for me, it's like, I have a business degree. I worked in corporate before that. I'd kind of just transitioned into, I was working for Lululemon at the time, really diving into my own stuff. And I was like, well, that's like running a brick and mortar. And they're like, brick and what? And I'm like a business. Like, do you want to run a business? And they're like, I just want to teach yoga. Like, this is not the same thing. Like, it's like you don't get to just be a yoga teacher and control your own schedule when you have a studio. You've got to do all the other nitty gritty stuff when you do that.
Yeah. It's yeah. I mean, having having been in that situation myself. It's like, I would say there's in the studio ownership situation, unless you have like a full-time business manager, like I would say there's more of all the other stuff that you don't really want to do than there is the teaching yoga.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I've talked to so many studio owners from all across the world on the podcast, and it's always interesting to hear the different takes on it and, you know, what types of things they hire out and what types of things they do themselves and the different things that they've learned. But I think something consistent is that, is I never expected to wear so many hats. Like, I'm not just a yoga teacher. I'm hardly even a yoga teacher. I do everything else, like, you know, buy toilet paper late in the night or show up to unclog a toilet or have to deal with some crazy money issue that I don't know how to deal with and all that sort of stuff that comes along with running something that's going to be successful and sustainable.
Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing. So I'm curious if, you know, there's a lot of new yoga teachers who listen to the podcast. Do you have any pieces of advice specifically for people who are kind of new into their career, new into the teaching industry, about how to kind of get started with your yoga career, your business, and kind of finding a path that's going to work for you long term?
I think that education is like so important. For me, you know, had I not stepped out and gotten some education from different modalities, I don't think I'd be in the position that I am in now. And I think that I continue to develop as a teacher because the education that I'm receiving is continuing to adapt as well. I think that in order to put great content out into the world, you really have to know as much as you possibly can moment to moment, knowing that this is, you know, a long-term situation. And I think that when you start to put really concise information out, and that could even just be when you're teaching your class, like when people can tell that you've really thought about things and your information is coming from a place that like really makes sense, I think people sense that and are drawn to that, especially in this yoga industry where there's so much stuff coming out of people's mouths that like maybe doesn't make any sense at all. And I think people are starting to clue in to that a little bit. And really just like figuring out, you know, maybe not everybody wants to learn about strength. Maybe people want to learn about other elements of the body or other elements of mental health or spirituality or whatever. But like really figuring out where you want to do that learning and figuring out how you can start to do that learning, but then also figuring out how is that going to actually come back into your teaching. Mm-hmm. I think it's just like so important because it's really going to inform everything else. You know, everything I post on Facebook basically is just my version of what I've learned in all of these courses that I've taken or, you know, workshops that I've taken, books that I've read, podcasts that I've listened to. It's not that we have to be going out and like paying $1 million for all this fancy education, but like finding some good learning tools, even if they're free tools online, that are going to really help you take your teaching and your whole thing kind of to the next level, especially, you know, there's just so many people teaching yoga and there's so many people doing the same thing kind of over and over again. And I think in that industry, people really sense that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think that that's a great piece of advice. And so you have your own podcast, the Mindful Strength Podcast. If somebody wants to go check that out, where can they find it?
So it's now pretty much everywhere. It's on my website. If you want show notes, you've got to go to katherinebrunyyoung.com. And it's on iTunes, it's on Stitcher, it's on Google Play. If you Google it, it'll come up. And when new episodes arrive, I usually post them on social media so people can also follow me there at Katherine Bruni Young. And yeah.
Amazing. And then if people want to check out your workshops, your online courses, it's the same, katherinebrunyyoung.com, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Everything is on the website. And there's like free resources on the website and all kinds of stuff for people to check out.
Amazing. Thank you so much for your time today, Catherine. I could seriously talk to you all afternoon about this stuff.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
All right, guys, I hope that you enjoyed that episode of the podcast with Catherine Bruni Young. Make sure you go and check out her work and what she's doing and see if she's coming to a town near you for a workshop. I know that she would be incredible to practice with. As always, thank you so much for listening. Thank you to the sponsors of the show, Yoga Boss Babe and Fave Yogis. And thank you to everyone who writes into me and asks questions and engages with content. And as well, thank you to everyone who's a part of Yoga Business Badasses. I really, really love the private community. It's one of my favorite things about running MBOM. And if you're not a part of it, you should definitely join. There is about 850 members now. It's a really supportive space. You can ask questions, you can get help on things you're working on, you can get feedback, opinions, resources, all of that good stuff. So if you are interested in that, it's Yoga Business Badasses on Facebook. Just search it, you'll find it. And of course, I'll let you in. You can also find me on Facebook and Instagram at Mastering the Business of Yoga. As always, the show notes are at www.mbomyoga.com. And you can always reach me at info@mbomyoga.com. As always, thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you next week. Namaste.